Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We have made the turn into 2021, and our football team has come along. I know many folks wondering why I don't have the purple floodlights up this year. They were bad luck last year. I took them down. We're winning. I'm going with it. I'm going with the magma lamp over here with the purple magma. So that's where we're going. We want to be going back to Tampa for the 20th anniversary of Super Bowl 35, where the Ravens did the deed the first time. Hoping to get there in a couple of weeks. Can be a little different. Radio Row is not where I'm going to be for the first time in 27 years. Out of my 30 years of doing radio, it's going to be a little weird, but we're going to be zooming in with old friends. And I think BJ Ganim's going to wear out my Zoom line between now and Super Bowl Sunday, coming in with veterans and folks. And dude, I am going to play in your football game. I'm an amputee, so, you know, my finger's up. So you're going to let me do this. And all the things I ever turned down before the plague, I'm now like, I got to go do that. Like the Northern Lights, that I'm going to go do that. But I'm going to play in your football game. How are you, my brother?
I am well. But, you know, you've had a standing invitation since you saw me on Letterman back in 2013. So why? What did we do to you?
Well, no, man. It's just always like on a field, and I've always got a hamstring. I woke up feeling good for the first time in a month today, man. So, you know, but then I think about like you, and then I think about like my, you were talking to my wife before the segment began. I want to welcome in Joe DeLamalier, who's usually next to you, usually going table to table. I've got a longer window here to sort of visit a little bit. BJ, we're going to tell your story. And Joe, certainly telling the story of the Buffalo Bills on a kid from Baltimore. When we were green rooming, you made a reference about my age. My brother, I saw you play for the 74, 75, 76, 70. Every year you came in with OJ, McKenzie, all those guys. You know, I was at a Memorial Stadium with my dad. So I didn't know how to pronounce your name when I had you on a football card, but I did indeed see you play. Joe D, how are you, my friend?
It's easy to pronounce. It's Joe.
Joe.
but I'm doing good. I'm doing well. I'm excited for this game. I'm glad we didn't have to, the Bills don't have to play them in Baltimore. That could, even without the crowd, it's an advantage, I think, to be at home. So, and we just got to hope for the best for Buffalo.
You know, you guys, I'm going to be talking to people in Buffalo all week about ins and outs of the game and, you know, all the reporters that cover the team. I was going to come up and during COVID, and I've got such great memories. You know, Joe, I was up there. First time I ever went to Buffalo was the Oakland Raiders AFC Championship game. That was a pretty good one. Wow. I was taunting Amy Trask on Twitter with my ticket stub from then. And you know, I was at the Thurman Thomas game in Minneapolis and, you know, like, all of these Bills memories, but the last 10, 15 years of thinking back to Jim Kelly and your era, you know, even prior to that, it's been hard. And I guess from a Buffalo perspective, we're going up there to take the lunch money away here this time. I'd love to see the Bills win a championship at some point, just not at our expense. That's all.
Yeah, you're right. I think the city deserves it. That'd be nice. But Cleveland is the same way. They've never even been to a Super Bowl. So this is a pretty amazing time. And, 2020 has been an amazing year. So one of those guys are probably going to go to the Super Bowl. Cleveland, good shot. Cleveland or Buffalo has a really good shot now.
Well, you know, we win on Saturday night. I will all be big Browns fans on Sunday because then the game will come back to Baltimore. What a weird time for both you. BJ, I know what a fan you are, and we're going to tell your story and our friendship and everything that's happened to you around the world and serving our country. I do want to say this, Joe, I'm going to get flippant with you right now, being a Baltimore guy. I went to Buffalo, and in 1991, I hated the Redskins because I'm from Baltimore. They took my team. You're familiar with that, right? So
right.
We had the Redskins pumped in here back in 91, 92. One of my dearest friends, Mike Resigliano, who's a big fan of yours, a big Buffalo Bills fan, he lent me all of his Bills gear. I went to my first ever Super Bowl, the legendary John Stedman, Hall of Famer, like you, gave me tickets, and I went to Minneapolis, and I wore all Bills gear. I was not a Bills fan. I was a Houston Oilers fan at the time. I actually ran into Warren Moon wearing all Oilers gear. It was weird. So, BJ, this morning, and I didn't do this for you. I mean, I did this for my friend Resig, who's my Buffalo cartoon buddy, who gave me his Zubaz pants to wear to the AFC Championship game. But I went camo today. And this is the closest I have This is, you know, everybody's wearing sweatpants, right? So this is the closest I have to Zubaz. So I, but it is a good week to be talking about patriotism. You know, tell your story, because I want everybody in this segment. I know it. I'm certainly never bored by it. I'm certainly, every time I hear it, it's a story that I think people need to hear, especially right here, right now, given where we are. Yeah. And I know that all that you do, we talk about planning your football game, and I see you every year, but everything you do is about the people that have fought for this country like you have and have given something for this country.
Yeah, so, I mean, and it's not just those people. It's us as a country. We got to get back to, we got to redefine what does it mean to be an American in the 21st century. Not what it means to be a Democrat or what it means to be a Republican or what does it mean to be any of the other labels we can come up with, right? But I served the United States Marine Corps. I'm super proud of that service. I didn't
know.
Tell
me where you are, by the way. You're in, like, Wisconsin, right?
I'm in Wisconsin.
Joe, where are you?
Somerville, South Carolina.
South Carolina. We're all in America, right? Like, all literally, right. I mean, I'm in Baltimore. We're in three different, this is like a CNN thing. You know, we're just like, right. All, you know, we're like on cable. We're in three different, you're usually together at a Super Bowl,
yep, right,
celebrating the league, and we're not going to be together this year, you know? And I think everybody's been rocked by what's happened this week, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But there's only one way forward, and that's together. And we got to put aside the different differences and whatnot. And that's what we learned in the service, right?
You're Wisconsin, you sign up. What year is it? Because I had never asked you all this. I have more time with you. They usually give me 10 minutes. So I want to hear the whole story.
So I grew up in Savannah, Georgia. So I enlisted from Savannah, Georgia, and went to Parris Island.
Not a far drive, by the way.
No, not a far drive at all. Shorter boat ride. But
I think I've told you this. My mom's from Abbeville, South Carolina. So
that's right,
all of my mom's family, Civil War veterans, monument in the square in Abbeville, is my great-great-grandfather, my mother's side. So
sure. My family, I'm third generation off the boat. We're Lebanese immigrants. So, you know, I grew up in Savannah. I went to college after high school. On an academic scholarship through the Hope Scholarship that they have there. And
you were smart.
Not that smart. Smart enough, right? Very quickly, I was asked to not come back due to my lack of academic performances. And it didn't have to do anything with my brains. It had everything to do with my effort.
So they sent you in the military to clean you up, fix you up.
I did. I mean, literally, I got drunk and watched Legends of the Fall and thought I could be Brad Pitt and decided to join the Marine Corps on a whim. Right. I was voted least likely to join the military. I got kicked out of military school as a high school student. So me and authority have never really gotten along well at all.
Mellencamp wrote a song about you.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, but joining the Marine Corps was the best decision I made. I was served for 4 years on active duty under the Clinton years when everything was ramping down, and then stayed in the reserves when I got out. I wanted to get a corporate career going, but I didn't want to give up what I began to love, which was the culture of the Marine Corps, the culture of the military, that culture that it didn't really matter who was to your left or to your right, but you needed them in order to survive. And you had to figure out a way to work with them, and you had to put in the work or else nothing was going to get done. And so that really meant something to me. So I stayed in the reserves, and then 2001 hits and we're at war, at a perpetual war, with no real enemy. We're fighting against an ideology that just wants to tear everything down. And being in Iraq and seeing what these people were doing to each other, the Sunnis and the Shias, right, were essentially where most of these terrorists come from. And it's two religious ideologies that are 99% the same, except for they disagree on which guy is the most holiest. That's the same path that we're on right now in this country by treating these political parties like religions. We have got to get off of this path that only leads to destruction. And we need to start reminding ourselves that we are a free nation, that we're all going to be different. We're the most diverse nation that's ever existed on this planet. This is not going to be easy, but the way we're going about it right now is completely wrong all the way around. The rhetoric that we're using, we have got to figure out where we are more alike than where we are different. And we've got to stop arguing about the past and start discussing our future together. Not to say that what happened in the past is, you know, we have a lot of different things in our past that we need to come together and find ways to move forward. But people are still killing themselves to get into this country. You know, my first roommate in the United States Marine Corps was an Ecuadorian citizen that was serving in the Marine Corps to earn his citizenship. And he ended up going on to spend 24 years in the United States Marine Corps. And these are the things that we've got to remember. I lost my leg in Iraq in 2004. And when I got home, I was not prepared to no longer be a Marine and to not be on the forefront of what we were fighting for the beliefs that we all have in this country. And it took me a while, and it took a lot of other people from all different walks of life to help me get back on track. And even a dog, you know, my dog Dozer, when I was in my darkest moment facing a divorce, a nasty divorce, a DUI charge, could possibly lose my career with Kraft, was going through a bankruptcy. I really thought about ending it, but I had this old English bulldog dog that wasn't trained, had no real skill set other than he can eat a piping hot cheeseburger in one bite and clear a room with his farts, right? And then those dogs,
because you weren't feeding him good stuff, BJ.
Exactly. Yeah. We're eating McDonald's, we're eating all the other junk, right? We weren't feeding him Blue Buffalo. But in that darkest moment, I knew that if I ended it all, no one would take care of this dog. And that was enough for me to pull my head out of my ass and start utilizing the family that I had around me, the friends that I had around me, the assets that were available to me, everything that everybody that came before me that provided this country, that made it to where you can make yourself what it is you want to do. I started to actionate that, started to put that into play, and my life started to turn around. And it all started with the 6 inches between my ears, right? And that's where I started Sierra Delta, is that I see the power of dogs. I know you're a cat person.
My kitty cat is now like social enough. She'll come up and sit on my lap if I'm not like screaming radio, but we've had her on the set a little bit. She's three now. It's taking a little bit of training. She's just an incredible, it's funny you'd even say that. My wife bought her one of those wheels. Because she's putting on a couple of COVID pounds. Sure. But we're all you're familiar. We're all familiar with that, right? So we took her to the vet back in like maybe August, and she's like, she gained a half pound. And we're like, and Jen's like, she's always wanted to have one of those big hamster wheels. Jen bought the big hamster wheel, put it all together, like, you know, Kia, you know, my wife, you know, she's an engineer, and started training her up with food about 2 weeks ago when a year turned, right at the beginning of the year. 2021, she started getting on the wheel in the middle of the night. I'll come out for a drink. She's on the wheel. So we have trained this cat, and she is the brightest part of our life. I mean, we love animals. So like every time I see you, I've met you through animals and Chad and other people that have been in. You always have football players around as well. But you've done a whole lot of different things here to serve military in the after losing your legs, to serve your brothers, right? And sisters,
right.
I should say.
And sisters, right. And to also find my way. You know, I think one of the biggest similarities that I've been able to know people like Joe here and the other NFL players is that once you're done with your military career, or you're done with your NFL career, there's no other way to kind of replicate that. It's gone for good. And that's a hard thing for, I think, a human to overcome. And that's where I've worked so hard into trying to figure out how we can make this transition better. Right.
Well, you know, the NFL sets up like a whole thing now, like 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Joe, when you stopped playing, what were you going to do? I mean, you played a long time. I mean, you know, not everybody played as long as you played, and you certainly didn't get wealthy playing in that era. Tell me where your head was when you were coming off the field at the end, because you went back and played Buffalo for a minute, right?
Yeah, I went back to Buffalo for my 13th year, and then I actually retired out of football when I saw Theismann break his leg, when LT broke his leg. I was living up in Buffalo. I hadn't seen my wife, and we had five kids at that time. Now we have six kids, but hadn't seen her in 10 weeks because I got released from Cleveland. Buffalo picked me up, so she didn't make the transition, you know, because the kids were in school and that. So she was there, and I was watching Theismann break his leg, and I'm thinking, I've never had a surgery in my life, and God's blessed me. And I looked at it. I said, what am I doing for three more weeks? I don't need the money. Not that we could always use the money, but we weren't making that much. I said, am I going to fly out to San Diego and that plane may crash? And this is my thoughts. And if I do make it to San Diego, what if I blow my knee out or blow a shoulder out? It's no different than a soldier would think, like, hey, I know I'm done. I know I'm done at this point. So I just quit.
How was your, from a health standpoint, how many surgeries and whatnot over the course of your years?
Mine?
Yes.
Mice, zero. No zero. Surgeries.
So you never were like game, beyond blessed, right? Like the Theismann thing freaked you out.
Yeah. Yeah. And then all the stuff with CTE came out, and I knew that a lot of guys were really messed up. Similar to what BJ, you know, when you come out, you start talking to guys and they were having a lot of issues. So I fought with Gene Upshaw all the time to improve pensions and take care of the guys who built the league because nobody has respect for them. So I identified football with a lot of military, like BJ said. I said, hey, somebody's got to step up and talk about this. And when I got in the Hall of Fame, I prayed to God. I was 13 years old league, and I'm thinking, everybody said, you should be in the Hall of Fame. I didn't know anything about it. But when I got in the Hall of Fame after 13 years, and I was the first ballot after 13 years, you can believe that. First time I got nominated, I made it. But I wasn't prepared to make it. God didn't want me to make it at that time, you know, through those years. He had a mission for me to do, and that's to speak up for the retired players. And Bruce Laird is in Baltimore. Bruce and I really hooked up together. We did a lot for the retired guys. And then it ended up our wives, Reagan's wife, my wife, Dave Wilcox's wife, Dave Casper. The women went to work for us. And we finally got a new agreement this year. It's not what we wanted, but it's better than what we had. But I can relate to a lot of things that the military guys go through because I didn't come out with an injury, but 99% of those guys have real problems when they come out. And the people think we made millions of dollars. Okay. Let me tell you, I was the number one draft pick. My salary is $22,000 in 1973. And I thought I robbed a bank because I just wanted to play.
I thought you were a hero. I was 6 years old and I'm out there. You're running around with O.J. Simpson. My dad's like, that's O.J. Simpson. You know, that's Joe Namath. The first game I ever saw, my dad took me out to Memorial Stadium 73. Marty Domrez was the quarterback for the Colts at that point. And, you know, I guess for all of this, all these years later, I've done almost 30 Super Bowls now, and I've met so many of the players, including you and so many of the Hall of Famers. And I told this story a little while ago. I was the world's biggest Earl Campbell fan. You know, like, I was an Oiler fan, and once we lost the team here, Dan Pastorini, those guys were my guys. And I was at a party about 7-8 years ago in Dallas, the Dallas Super Bowl, whenever that was, 11, maybe 10 years ago now. Wow. It's all getting away from us, BJ, before I even knew you, and I feel like I've known you forever. And I was at a party, and Earl Campbell was there, and I'd never met Earl, you know, and I'm just a big fan, and you know, Earl couldn't get up, right? I mean, and Earl invited me to sit on his lap. I got to sit on Earl Campbell's lap and take a picture, you know? And you're smiling, Joe, right? But heroes to us, but also realizing these are human beings that are putting their bodies through a lot. And I think the league's done a lot for that, certainly in the way that the game is officiated at this point, the way quarterbacking is officiated at this point. Joe, you would admit that, you know, trying to keep the players healthy is a big, big part of what they're trying to do right now. But it's a violent game, right?
Yeah, it's a violent game, but there's better ways to do it. My son and I, we do a thing called Tip of the Spear with Scott Peters. He's the assistant line coach for Cleveland. It's the first time he's coached. This would be like a military guy who's never been to war, never been to boot camp and everything. He gets to be a general, basically. Scott is now coaching the Cleveland Brown offensive line. Had not coached ever in the NFL. Played 8 years, but been out of football. But he mastered what he was doing. And guess what? Cleveland's got the number one offensive line right now. And they came in there that game last week. They had two or three starters out, and they destroyed the Steelers. They didn't have any sacks. I don't think – maybe they had one sack or something on watching. But there's so many things you can do that people don't believe in. The military does this. And the whole point of all this thing why I wanted to do this with BJ is the American people don't know the story why these dogs are so important. These guys went and served for us, made our country what it is today, and we can't afford to train these dogs. We're trying to raise money. Everybody should be giving it to us for what they've done. This is not a hard project. It's just people don't know about it. And once we get this word out, we can do so much for so many people and families. The dog is going to affect the whole family. It's going to make the soldier better. It's going to make his life with his wife better. It's going to make the kids happier. You're affecting a lot of people with one creature from God, a dog.
So BJ, you brought the dogs by. I think I maybe met you in Arizona, some of these places where you've come by, New York, certainly. Tell everybody what the ask is here from you, because you visit, and I'm sure you'll visit again before the Super Bowl with another Hall of Famer, because you generally do come back into my life here, and certainly this has been a crazy week for you to come back. We're talking about where the country is, and you and I talking about the military, even me wearing my military Zubaz here, but what's the ask for you?
So the ask is currently in this nation, there's 18 million vets that are still alive. Of those 18 million, 12 million are 55 and older, right? So we're a dying population. Out of those 18 million, 150,000 vets need a public access service dog, a legit service dog to meet disability needs. Currently, we only provide 1,000 dogs a year for veterans.
That's 150,000.
So it's going to take us 150 years to actually solve the problem. I didn't see that. That should not even, the rate at which we're trying to solve this problem is un-American. We do things better. We need to do this at scale. So with Sierra Delta, what we have done is built a community that will help all veterans. At this point, I got tired of submitting veterans for a service dog to different groups and them being denied. We have Stephanie Marvin Miller, who's one of our ambassadors. She was denied by 11 service dog companies before she found us. And the main reason she was denied is because she was raped in the military, and most of the dog companies didn't want to deal with something like that. That's wrong. This is 35,000-year-old technology, humans and dogs working together. What we do is
I'm going to pull your website up here and let you talk about it a little bit, because I can do that here on the Zoom. Go for it, man.
So what
SierraDelta.com. There you have it.
That's right. There it is. And what we're doing, we built it on four key principles: empowerment, purpose, innovation, and community. The empowerment is that we help the veterans, if they already have a dog, to get training based around their needs, right? Not 95% of the veterans do not need a public access service dog, but what they could really use is that connection again. And so what we do is we have some vets that are getting dogs trained for hunting. We have some that are being trained for dock diving and frisbee toss. Others are just well-trained family pets at home. But what
I like how you pick the cute ones and put them up here.
Absolutely. Well, you have to. There's hardly any ugly dogs. I have an old English bulldog. She's 10 years old, but she gets the most love because she's so ugly. She's cute, right? But at the end of the day, what we miss in the military is that connection that we had with other service members, the people that understood that it wasn't about us, it was about the group. And I think Joe can actually speak to the fact that that's a lot of what the NFL players miss. They miss that locker room, if you will.
Yeah.
Right? That commitment to excellence, that no matter what gets thrown at us, we're going to figure it out and we're going to find a way to win. And if we lose, we're going to regroup and we're going to do it again.
Nothing like a team effort.
Nothing like a team effort. So I can't assign everybody a fire team again or a squad again of people, but what we can do is we can take some of these dogs that are languishing in rescues, right? We kill 800,000 large breed, healthy, trainable, adoptable dogs every year.
800,000?
800,000 large breed, right? And so—
Well, Joe, this is obvious, right? I mean, when they bring this to you and say you want to speak up for this, this is kind of an obvious putting one with the other, right? Literally.
And so
I do things with the military. I work with my wife and I volunteer at the Fisher House, which is just a simple thing. We give 4 hours a week. My wife serves food. I carry luggage up to their rooms. And it's a Ronald McDonald House for veterans, basically. That's what it is. And if you tell people about this, have you ever heard of Ronald the Fisher House, the host. Have you ever heard of the Fisher House?
No, but I've heard of Ronald McDonald House.
Yeah, Fisher House, they're all over the country. Nobody knows about it. And that's the whole story why I want to hook up with BJ, because I can use a platform of being a football player. I'm not O.J. Simpson. I'm a big name because there's 13 letters in it, but I'm not a big name in sports anymore. I played. Nobody remembers you unless you played in that town. But when people connect with you, I'm passionate about this. We got to help people. We got to help families. And dogs are important. I don't have one right now, but my granddaughters, they all have dogs. We have a lot of dogs. They're grandbabies. I got 12 grandkids.
Their commitment, and you give to them,
exactly.
And they give back. You know,
but they're going to take it back, and it's better to give to somebody else or another creature from God than to be all about me. That's why I hate the politicians. They could pay for this. They're sitting on their butts, playing probably on an iPad when they're in Congress. Take some of their salary and give it to this fund and help the guys who built this nation what it is, that you can sit there on your butt and play on an iPad and say you're a congressman or a senator. Everybody pitch in together and let's get this thing done.
And that's what we do. We take the training, we support the training around them. If they need to get into the actual schools, we help them do that. But these vets, they earn based on what they give back to their community, right? So we really help to empower them to get out there, work with kids in schools, the homeless shelters, the animal shelters, right? Really giving that sense of purpose back and let them know, we know, hey, I've sacrificed a lot for this country, but I've got a lot more to give. And the rest of the veterans are with me too. And what we're doing is we're building this around whatever. If you don't like veterans and dogs, I question your patriotism to this.
Man, this is the most obvious thing ever. I'll send everybody out to Sierra Delta. Joe, our time's a little short here in the window, and I appreciate you coming by. Bill's going to win. I mean, this Josh Allen kid, he can run around.
Of course. They're going to keep that kid in the pocket, and then they're going to let Josh do it.
Nothing like a Saturday night in January in Buffalo, is there, Joe?
No, nothing better other than the bars after. So.
The great Hall of Famer, Joe DeLaMalier, and our friend, B.J. Gannum, who we once had a beverage with in New York. You never knew you were going to run into in Manhattan. Sierra Delta, keep up the great work with the dogs. B.J., I'll see you again before the Super Bowl. All right, brother?
You will. I'll be back, man. Thanks again for having me, and keep up the great work.
We're doing Radio Row like for a whole month here this month, so make sure you're tuning in. WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore Positive.